Welcome to Set Notes.
Thank you for
coming here. People won't know, but we kind of know each other. I've known you for, well, how many years?
Jesus Christ, it's about 11 years. I think I met you when I was like 19 or 20. Yeah,
I'm sure we'll work out what production company it is. Because it was one company that wasn't Tantrum, was it?
No, it was actually. It was Tantrum. There was some stuff with Mustard back in the day, but the main stuff was with Tantrum, with Stephen Pipe.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff there.
Because like I remember, I have memories of us working together, but the main memory when we first started chatting was when we did we were at Black Island and we had a really long shoot and it was right at the end.
Yeah.
And you know, it's right at the end when just everyone's fucked off basically apart from, you know, the dedicated runners and me usually like looking around, checking there's no equipment being left behind.
Yeah,
and I remember it's just me and you. I just remember this, I have this memory of being in a big empty studio, really kind of bug-eyed because we've been working for too long and having a chat. And I remember saying to you, you know, what are you doing? You know, what age are you going to direct? And I remember that's the first time I was like, oh yeah, right, I can see you being like, director.
It's crazy, man. That it's great that you actually remember it like I do, because a lot of those times, especially as a runner, right, like you might hold memories in your mind a lot more than people that are just like throwing like knowledge to you. Do you know what I mean? But it's mad because that's literally exactly what it was. It was like, I think it was everyone like you, the Sparks and stuff, some of the camera teams loading your like, it's not a van, what is it?
It's a horse box, the trailer.
Horse box, there yeah, you go. The infamous Ian Murray horse box trailer. Yeah. And like the other runners have been told, you can, like the production's already said, you can go now. Like it's been a long day, whatever. They're just loading that and they're leaving. But I always used to just, people that I liked and that I like looked up to, especially, I would like try to help them a step further than what I would just usually do as a runner. So I was like, nah, I'm here already. I mean, what's another half an hour or whatever? I'd rather just stay. They can get out quicker and I can learn some stuff or whatever. Or just doing it because I was trying to do a good job. So helped that get loaded. Then after that was loaded, then me and you were speaking for a bit. So it's like you said, it was empty studio, probably ridiculous o'clock. Like,
yeah.
And we were just chatting about stuff. You were saying, what are you trying to do? I said, I want to direct. At that point, I had ideas, but I hadn't really started to get going with it yet. And then you were saying to me about the 10,000 hours, like if someone puts 10,000 hours into anything, they're going to be an expert, like, and et cetera, et cetera. And that actually just really spurred me on because you were one of the first people that I looked up to in the industry. And I was like, this is Ian telling me this. Like, I must have it. Like, yeah, it's true. If I just do this and do this, it'll be fine.
Well, what impressed me is the fact that you did stay behind and you were interested and you were asking all the right questions. And that's a massive sign. If someone's going to give up their time and have the enthusiasm for it, that combination of being able to put the work in, the persistence and the enthusiasm, that is a killer combination, I think.
Yeah, 100%.
You demonstrated that very early on.
My man. 100%. It's funny you say that, because even like now directing, like meeting runners and just people that come into the industry that show an interest, it's like, it's exactly what you just said. Like those people that have the combination of like the work ethic, the intrigue and interest, but also like the kind of the belief in themselves and like the imagination to take it there. They're the people that I really gravitate to and like want to help, because you can see it in them. Like you said that you felt like you saw that in me. So
yeah, you can tell when someone's on a film set, you can tell literally within 5 minutes. If this is for them or not.
Agreed.
I mean, you see them off a film set and they say all the right things and maybe they're really artistic or they got a really great kind of analytical mind or something, but you see them on a film set, you're like,
it's not a joke.
This is not for you.
Exactly. It's funny though, because there's so many like different routes to like wherever people want to go, whether it's like directing, being a DOP, et cetera. But like on set really is like where it separates people very quickly from if they think they want to do something to them actually doing it. Because it's not all the, especially coming up, it's not like the glitz and glam that you kind of think one assumes on the outside of what it is. And it's kind of like you realize very quickly, is this for me? Like, can I do this? But I'm really grateful like for those days, like, because it's like it teaches you humility, especially when you're trying to direct and make your own stuff alongside the running. Nothing is going to be more humbling than being a runner while also being a director, because you're on both sides of it. It's like one day you could be doing something, being treated a certain way, doing this, doing that. Then the next day you're not. It's the absolute opposite. But at the time it was like a bit like, oh, this is a bit mad. But now I'm actually a lot more, it's like it was humbling. It still is humbling now. So it was great.
Well, you know, it's like when someone goes, I think the test of a real director is someone that's just has this creative impulse that needs to get out. Like it's not even a desire, or it's not a life, certainly not a lifestyle thing. It's like you pointed out, the lifestyle from the outside is very different. It's very different from the inside as it looks to be from the outside. So if you're into the lifestyle of it, if you're into being famous or having some notoriety or having kind of respect or whatever, probably not for you. Again, it's like you say, you've got to fight through, you've got to go through the wall of fire to get anywhere. And I think the ones that succeed are the ones that have this need to express themselves. It's sort of, it's not like it's choice being a director. It's like you just have this real need to get that voice out somehow. And the fact that you were working on your voice and you were experiencing all the humbling situation of being like a runner, and then later on, as you were explaining earlier, about being a sort of second and first AD and having to deal with older crew and having to get through all of that. So you kind of earned your credentials of being on a film set before you became the director on a film set, which I think is a really good way around of doing it. But you clearly had that need to express yourself. From an early, because I'm, you know, you spoke about it early on, and then we had that. Do you remember we had that meeting by the canal?
That was so random. But that was great as well, man. That's great. Because was that before the lockdown? Or was that after?
Oh man, I think it might have been around the period of lockdown.
It might have been maybe just after. Yeah. Like it was either 2 years ago. It was maybe like three. But that was great as well. We was chatting a bit. I think there was a project coming up that was like a music video that didn't have a lot of money, but I had a little bit of a creative idea for it. It didn't happen in the end anyway, but I was trying to tempt you. Yeah. I don't think the temptation was enough.
I want to work with you, man.
I'm playing. But that was great as well. I hadn't seen you in a long time at that point. So that was great. But it's funny you say that thing about the like almost like earning the stripes thing. It's another thing like, that way of doing it, obviously I can only speak to my experience of it. People come up in different ways. Some people just self-shoot for ages, then eventually some people come out of film school, some people do the runner path. People do all different shit to get there, right? But like what I loved about doing the runner part was like you said, the earning the stripes, and also just like meeting all the people and really understanding on a set, this is the image and this is the scene that we got out of having 50 people doing X, Y, and Z. If I'm trying to recreate something similar, this is what I need to be able to do it to the highest of levels. And that was like something that every time I was on a set, and I was probably like as a runner, like doing maybe like, you know, at least like two to three, like busy times, like, like two, three shoots, sometimes four shoots a week. So you're always on set. You're always seeing what it takes to create these worlds or a scene or a feeling or whatever. And like that was vital, like in terms of when I was trying to create my own stuff, what do I need? Who do I need? And knowing those people personally was like literally invaluable. Because instead of me being like, feeling like I'm on my own with it, there was people I knew personally to be like, hey, I've got this idea. I'm trying to do this. Like, what do you think I should do? Or can you help me out? And so much of like the success and like the kind of catalyst to it all, like. And obviously, listen, I'm still getting going now. I'm still at the beginning of it all, really, as a director coming up. But I'm just saying, even to get to this point, so much of it, the catalyst of it was knowing people personally and the amazing people that, like, helped me out with a lot of the films that had no money, just had an idea. Like you said, just an idea that was, like, burning to be told. And people that I was making tea for, making coffee for, whatever, they would help me do it. Whether they would say, asking their assistants come on set, whether some of them were coming on set themselves, like, you know what I mean? Big men and big women that are you know, full on adults, got responsibilities. They were coming on set like on the weekend and helping me do something or lending me something. And it was amazing, man. And like I said, those people I always am very like grateful for, because without that, it would have been a very, very different journey.
Yeah, I mean, filmmaking obviously is a collaborative medium. And you built yourself up a network by doing the running work, and by basically people really warming to you and liking you, because you could have had that same journey if you weren't such a charismatic character, and you wouldn't have got the network. Do you know what I mean? So it's like being a director is a combination of things, but one of the qualities that I think is quite important is the charisma side of it. And the ones that are really successful tend to have that. It's being able to motivate people to do something for you despite everything else that's going on, and you know, and without maybe being paid the correct amount or without the equipment being, you know, as it should be. And it's kind of having that human will to push through. And I think all of the best filmmakers all have that kind of quality of having that charisma that basically rallies a group of people to really think that something's worth doing. So that's probably served you really well. Should we go back to like how you got into that? Because I know you from sort of the running Did you go to? Did you have any formal training in film before?
Do you know what? No, mate. Like, I went to I went to sixth form after like high school. So like secondary school, my secondary school had a sixth form. I went there for a year, and did like A levels, you could say. But I just quickly realized like this is just not really for me. Like high school, I was I did well, but probably maybe didn't do as well as I could have if I applied myself more. Mm. But then in sixth form where I had these A levels, I just wasn't really into it. But I loved media. Like I loved the media A level because that's where we were making films. Like we were actually making stuff. Whereas the other ones I just wasn't really paying attention to. And I don't.
So were you always more into the practical side of things?
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I used to love stories. Like I loved English. I loved like poetry. Like I used to like, you know, write bars and like was in a little group when I was like early teenagers, like rapping and stuff. Like and always loved like spoken word and like I said, stories, English literature. That was the stuff that I was drawn to, and sports. Yeah. And media, like I love media.
Did you know at that early age, did you know you wanted to be a director?
No, I didn't know. I didn't per se know exactly that's what I was going to be, but I knew it was going to be something like in the creative world, whether it was like music. If something was in my head that was telling me that I had not my own story, but I wanted to tell stories. Do you know what I mean?
Do you remember a time when you were kind of firstly really impacted by filmmaking? Do you see? Do you remember a film or something you saw?
Yeah, really? Definitely, man. Like some of the films early on that had like a big impact on me was probably one of the main ones was City of God. Loved that film. Like,
how old were you when you saw that? Do you remember?
I was probably like, I want to say I was probably about maybe like 14, 15. I'm not sure exactly when it came out, but it's probably maybe like a year or two after it. When did it come out? Early 2000s?
Yeah, probably. We'll have to check that. But
Something like that. But yeah, it was around that age anyway, and I was just blown away, man. I was like, I've never seen something. Look, what I loved about that was like the combination of it feeling like you're watching it like it's really happening. Do you know what I mean? Like I'd never seen a combination of like, I don't want to say documentary, but almost like a doco style. Combined with a script where these characters are actually cast, but they feel so real.
Yeah.
And obviously a lot of it, when I looked into it, a lot of them were like street cast, et cetera, from the area, which made a lot of sense. But even just like as well, like it's being a foreign language film. The fact there was a foreign language film, it didn't even really matter. A lot of the other, at that age, especially short attention span, a lot of the films that I'd watched that were foreign language, I kind of switch off a little bit, wasn't really quite getting it, whatever. This film was the first film where I was like, when a story is so strong and the characters are so strong and it doesn't matter. And like the you know, the aesthetic is so strong, everything. It doesn't matter the way it's being told or how it's being told, really. Do you know what I mean? And that was like the first one I was like, wow, this really blew me away. And yeah, that was around that age. And then when I went into sixth form, there was one of the A-levels was media, made some like terrible films, but I enjoyed it. Like I really enjoyed that process. So I kind of like, to be real, like I kind of flopped A-levels, like kind of a bit of a side story, but like me and my guys in sixth form, we loved playing cards and we loved gambling. And I swear a lot of the time, it wasn't big money, obviously, I didn't have money at that age, but it's like, we used to just spend a lot of the time just like playing cards or trying. It sounds ridiculous, I'm saying that out loud now, but that was what we were doing. We weren't really focused. I wasn't focused enough on what I was doing. But when I did media and I made films, I knew that this was something I love that I want to pursue a little bit more. So I knew that, let me do this. It would be great if I could just only do this. I only wanted to do that as one of my A-levels. So I went and did a BTEC in like film production, right? Which is college. So it's not university at that point. It's college, like 16, 17 to 19. So I went and did that, and I really enjoyed that. Like, again, the filmmaking side of it, I loved directing stuff, I loved editing stuff, I loved the process, trying to tell stories, etc. So I actually really enjoyed that.
And when you were at that stage, did you kind of levitate towards wanting to direct and lead the projects?
And again, man, like, yeah, but at the same time, I wasn't thinking, like, I'm going to be a director. It was weird. I don't know how to explain it. Like, because it wasn't uni either, it wasn't like we were doing short films. It was like we were doing stuff like, you know, like it was more conceptual with a lo-fi equipment. So it's like, okay, make your own 30-second commercial would be like a task, right? And you've got one camera and just like yourself. Do you know what I mean? And then I'd love the process of like creating things that I could then I had ideas that could come alive, like literally come alive. And like, it sounds kind of cheesy, but that's one of the things, even now, that's the main thing that I love about filmmaking. You could have a dream, you could have an epiphany, you could just have a thought process, you could write something down. It's one of the only mediums like on earth where you can make that literally be a thing that you don't have to say anything. That can just be shared with another person. Your experience, like, you know what I mean? Or someone's experience. And once it's made, it's forever. That's another thing. Like a lot of jobs, you put in a lot of effort. And I was talking about this with like a gaffer like a couple of years ago. When you work like maybe, I can't think of a specific example. You may work an office job or you work at this, whatever. The work that you put in, you don't have something necessarily to show for it ever. It's just kind of like you have a steady progression. Maybe you get a little bit more money, you get this, you get that. But you don't have like, this was a month of my life.
Yeah, like an artifact.
Yeah, like this was a month of my life. Just like someone, you know, someone that I don't know, makes furniture. At the end of their month, they've got a certain amount of furniture that's made, that's physically there. I feel like similar with filmmaking. Like those 2 months were crazy, oh my God, in 2019. But that was the result of my skill set, everybody else's skill set at that time, those people I shared with. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've always loved that. Like that kind of like, not finality, I don't know the exact word, but that kind of like feeling
it's
where—
it's having a tangible product
Of an idea process. Yeah. And
it's like birthing something. You have something in your head and you make it a tangible thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. That can be like interpreted and like and enjoyed by people or just taken in by other people. And I just think as well, like, there's almost like something a bit therapeutic as well, that like when something's done, it's like done. Especially like short form, like you can like, once it's finished, that was amazing. Okay, cool, now I can move on to something else. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, for me anyway, it's a really nice feeling when a job is done. Like, and that's worth more, knowing that the film is made and it's made to a standard and like a level to which you wanted it to be. That is way more valuable to me than like the money itself. You know what I mean? The money is always like it's a secondary thing a lot of the time. Do you know what I mean? And like you were saying earlier about like, you know, if people are getting into things for the fame, the this, the notoriety, the respect, they're not going to go far with it because that's not a big enough motivator to really do this, I feel like anyway. And another one of the you know, the things that I think could be added to that list is money. When people think, oh, you know, this director made this amount of money from filmmaking, like the directing side of it. If you want to get money, of course you can think about ways you can make money within the film industry. But I think being a director specifically, right? If you're trying to be a director to get money, you're the first year you're going to be like, forget this. Like, do you know what I mean? Can you swear on this or not?
Yeah.
I was going to say, forget this shit. You wouldn't be thinking, you know, after your first few days on a short film or whatever, as a runner or even as a director getting no money, losing money, this, that, and the other, waking up at the crack of dawn, treated this way, treated that way, or failing. People not liking your stuff not being received well. You got to have thick skin. All this stuff, like, you wouldn't go through that if your motivation was money, because there's no guarantee of money at the on the other side anyway. You got to do it because you love it first, and then from that love like comes a style of this, people wanting to work with you, and then obviously the money comes. But that's what I feel like about it as well, man. If you don't love it, again, sounds kind of cheesy, but it's true. If you don't love it, it's like sports. I feel like as well, you have to love it to begin with when there is no money involved, when there's nothing involved, when there's no respect, no fame, no people aren't seeing your stuff. And if they are, it's crap. That's when you really like know, do I want to do this? Is when you continue past that because you just love doing it and you do it whether you were getting paid for it, whether it was your job or not. Do you know what I mean? Yes. That's what I think, like,
that's the real test. And also I think the money follows passion. It's not the other way around. You have to have the passion for something, and then if you have it and you do well, and then eventually the money will follow that.
Yeah,
but
I like that.
But it's not like you can't go for the money and expect the passion to sort of follow the money.
Yeah, no, I agree. Completely agree with that.
Yeah. So let's, where should we start? Where do you want to start? Because I got a load of stuff up here. It's up to you, man.
We can start on the earlier stuff. We can start on the, you know, the more current stuff, whatever.
Well, they've got your website up here. So
this is the website. It's kind of a bit outdated, but it's kind of good for now. Yeah. But there's the code website that's got more of the more current stuff. But this is good for like the you know, this is kind of a bit in order of how things have gone, which is cool. Like that first one down there, with the diving boards and shit. That was like one of the first films I ever really made.
Oh, right. Okay, let's have a look at this. So, do you want to talk us through this?
Yeah. So, basically, this was like part of, there was this, it's like a charity charity filmmaking competition, right, which is a great initiative, is by this organization called AdCan. And what they do basically is they ask people to respond to briefs from, like, you know, four or five different charities. Mm. You obviously don't get a budget. You have to make a film for this charity based on a brief. Then they choose the four finalists for, you know, the charity to actually choose, right?
Yeah.
At the end. So this one was a charity called Girlhood, which was encouraging young women to choose, talking about like career opportunities, what we were talking about earlier in the creative industry, it was encouraging women to choose a creative path and follow that as a career, right? And we made this, me and Joel Honeywell, my DOP for this one. Because when I met him, he was like an AC. And I was a runner, and we would like chat a lot about ideas and stuff. And we saw this brief come out, and he told me about AdCan and was like, you know, let's try to make something. So the idea, like, it's funny, like, the mixed format vibe, there was a film out at the time, because this is from 2016, which is crazy for me to think. This is seven years ago now. I'm mad.
Yeah.
Mental. But at the time, we'd seen this music video called Nikes, and it was by Frank Ocean.
Yeah.
And I think the director was... Tyrone Lebon, one of them. I don't want to butcher that, but yeah, it was Frank or Tyrone Lebon. But it's a great music video, man. It's great, and it was mixed format vibes, and just really enjoyed the style and the way in which it was done.
Yeah,
and then that was kind of like that kind of inspired this, but also with this, because it was like we were filming different women that were really from these fields, which was another thing that I love and that I try to like implement in my work as well, where you can have someone really be it. I'm not looking for an actor. Like if someone's actually doing something, it's even like commercials when you like, and you've got the budget to be able to get an actor. Mm. If someone's comfortable and is what you're looking for, I'd much rather like shoot and choose that person.
Mm.
So with this, there was like different people from creative backgrounds. This was a lady that was like, there was a dancer. She ran like dance initiatives for like, I think like different communities of people, which was amazing. One of them was my friend Erin, who was an artist and a painter, do you know what I mean? At the time, and doing fashion as well. There was a diver, you know what I mean? It was like more sports orientated, but still creative from like, you know, movement perspective. A drummer, who was my friend from school, Ellie. And then Josie, who was a photographer, who I actually used to run with as well. So these are all people that I kind of like had a connection with.
So you already had, half the direction was already done, right?
Because
they already trusted you and they'll be comfortable with you.
Exactly, exactly. And then it was just like, how are we going to tell this story? And the thing that I loved about the mixed format as well, because we were literally rocking up to their actual places in which they were working and creating, it was like, it felt a bit more like authentic to be a bit lo-fi as well with their process of what they were doing, and made it more captivating as well.
I mean, looking at the formats here, so this looks like an old VHS type.
Yeah, so do you know what's crazy? Again, because there was literally zero budget.
Yeah.
This was a phone app. So I didn't actually, at the time, have the camcorder to do it, right? So this was an actual phone app, this part of it.
Yeah.
But then we had like I think we were shooting like a C300 or something for the digital stuff, stuff. We didn't have any lighting equipment, nothing. Do you know what I mean? It was just the camera. So that's the C300 there. Then we had Super 8. That was real
Super
8.
That was real Super 8.
To be fair, I always much rather shoot the real thing, obviously.
Format,
but just for this one, with the minimal of what we had and it came so quick, it was like, okay, this is an option to have something that was a different look. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right, and you know what? Well, listen, we had no lighting equipment. And this day, the way that the light was hitting.
To get an underwater shot with the sun.
So that was GoPro, actually. Right. Yeah. But to get the sun, this is what I mean. Yeah. That shot there. And also as well, if you go back a little bit, if you go like to the beginning of the diver section, if you just play it from here, right?
Yeah, that's
the way that
light.
The sun was just going across.
Gorgeous, man.
Me and Joel were like, yo, people are gonna think that we actually have equipment on this job. Like, we were just winging it, man. Like, he was sitting on the seats across the pool. We didn't even have the money to like rent the pool properly, and we were just lucky there was nobody in it. They like let us use it because she's a diver, right? So she used this place to practice. It was all just, it was so much winging it, but sometimes,
where was the pool? It looks a little bit like Crystal Palace.
Yeah, I think it might have been, I can't actually remember. It was definitely south, though.
Because I wang on a lot about light, and this is a really good example of why the sun produces parallel shadows,
because
you see the shaft of sunlight there and how parallel that is.
So
we talk a lot about that. That reflector system that I use, so it's called Lightstream, and it's, you bounce lights into these little proprietary reflectors. And what it does, it basically, we have these parallel lenses that we put on the light. So we create parallel beams and put them into reflectors. And we can create that kind of shaft of light that's parallel quite close up. Because traditionally, to get a parallel beam like that, you have to have the light very far away. Because if the light's very close to something, it produces divergent beams.
And the
further away it is from something, the more the beams become parallel. And by virtue of the sun being so far away, you get beams like that. Subconsciously, we relate that to real sunlight.
Yeah.
So we might not know it in our minds, but we understand, we feel it.
Part
of sunlight is basically being parallel. And so I'm always talking to people about the importance of parallel beams and how you can get them with this lighting system.
It was great, man. I really enjoyed this process. I loved, like, I edited this myself as well with Joel, so it was, that was cool as well. A lot of my earlier stuff I edited. I'm very, very slow though. I feel like I'm a good editor, but I'm slow.
Yeah.
So I love working with, you know, great editors now. Yeah. But that was like the vibe, right?
So what time was that? When was that?
This was summer 2016. So this is like seven years ago.
Like you said, 7 years ago.
It's one of the first things that I made. And it was the first thing that got, like, you know, some love. Like, it was a finalist with this with the AdCan Awards, where they bring, like, the, you know, these young filmmakers that have made these pieces to, like, an event. They have, like, a bit of a network. They have established directors that talk to you, production companies. It's a great, like, I don't know if they're still going now, but it was a great thing at the time for people to get into, especially on the short form side of things.
Yeah.
And I did that one. And I did another one that was for men's.
That on here as well?
That one's not on here, no. It didn't really quite come out the way that I wanted it to, but that's all, like, trial and error, you know. But it was, like, it was one for Calm, which was, like, a charity for prevention of male suicide.
I did an ad for Calm.
Really? Well. Right. But this one was, again, it was just a response to a brief. Yeah. But there were some great ones that year that were done. But the one that I did, I had ideas for it that I wanted to be executed a certain way, and I didn't quite execute how I wanted to. But again, man, all them experiences, man, they're priceless. Because every time you do a job, like, you're always going to learn something. Do you know what I mean? And like, now I always say, again, listen, I'm very early in my journey myself, right? But, like, whenever I'm talking to, like, younger people that are getting into filmmaking or maybe hesitant to, like, make mistakes, especially nowadays, it's even more social media focused. Like, 7 years is a short time. But in terms of, like, social media, like, that's a long time in terms of the difference. And I feel like now, if you were hesitant back then to do something and put it out there because people were going to see it and respond to it and not think it's good or whatever, now is even more pressure cooker. Like, comparison. Like, look at what so-and-so's doing. He's only 21 and he's directing this. Yeah. I'm 21, I haven't done anything. When I do, it'll be shit. Like, that kind of vibe, you're going to just never do anything. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And, like, I always try to say to people, like, you have to embrace, like, the possibility of being bad. You're starting off, like, and again, it's like, it's a saying that some people, like, find, like, a bit cliche, but it's true. It's like, you don't have to be great to start. You have to start to be great. Like, you have to start to be great. Like, you're not going to be great when you begin. Yeah. I was a bit deluded. Like, I thought I was great even when I started. Like, I did a music video, I think a year before this was my first ever thing I directed. So 2015, music video. Man, it was so bad. But at the time, I thought it was great.
So, quite a humbling experience.
Especially looking back.
Yeah.
And it's like, like I said, like, you just gotta try to start and just don't expect too much
success at the beginning of a career is actually quite bad for the overall career.
It's better to make the really bad mistakes in the dark. Like, by the time, like, when you're just doing it with you and your pals or a couple of your friends from the film industry, you're making a film and it's bad, or you make a big mistake that, like, fucks up the narrative or doesn't make sense. It's like, okay, phew, that was just a music video. That was the thing I was just making, right? Because when you, again, like, to your point, when you start getting to, like, the place where you are doing commercials for clients, things are being seen, music videos for artists, blah, 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 blah. When you're making big mistakes, they're not forgiven, like, really. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, the big ones that you would make early on. So it's kind of, like, better to just make those as you're going along rather than the pressure to be on you and the microscope to be on you early when you're not quite ready. And that's another thing that I was glad moving when I started, like, you know, doing music videos, commercials, etc. It's like a lot of those bigger mistakes. Obviously, there's always a possibility of making big mistakes, but I just mean I felt ready by the time it came. I didn't feel overwhelmed. I didn't feel like I couldn't do it because I'd already kind of been doing it, but just not with the stakes not being so high.
Yeah,
which was great. That was invaluable as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've always, I mean, going back to the point we talked about before,
There's going to be so many tangents in this podcast, man. I'm not going to lie. But yeah.
You know, like you're saying, when you compare, particularly social media, when you compare yourself to other people's work.
Yeah.
They say in AA, they say compare and despair. Mm. Like if you compare, you're going to despair. I mean, there's no way. It's an emotional kind of addiction to compare yourself to other people and things.
Definitely.
And social media is really amplifying at the moment because everyone looks like, from the outside, they look like they're more successful than you. They're better looking than you.
Of course.
They're having a better life than you.
Of course.
Generally.
Course.
They're earning
course.
More money than you. Everything
of course, it's all like, it's all perception as well, and a lot of it isn't real. And it's funny. It's funny, like you just said about the compare and despair thing. It's human nature to compare, right? And there was, oh man, who was it? There was some podcast I was listening to a few years ago, just while I was driving, and there was such a great story about like, so years gone by, right? Say you're a caveman or cavewoman, years gone by. You're in your little village, yeah. You're amazing at shooting a bow and arrow. There's one dude or there's one woman that's also amazing in that village. That's the person you're looking at. Like, this damn person. I'm the best bow and arrow shooter here. That person's not better. Person's better than me. Are they making a better bow than me? Right. So you got one person that you're comparing yourself to and thinking like negatively about or thinking negatively about yourself, insecurities, whatever. That one other person. With social media, there's people from all around the world you would other have never even known. You wouldn't have even known of their work. You wouldn't have, do you know what I mean? You wouldn't have been able to look at it. You wouldn't have access to it. You wouldn't know they exist. All those people are now part of a village in your own mind that you're comparing yourself to. Regardless of, and filmmaking is, and photos as well, photography, that's like the biggest meaning because that's what it's based on. Like all the social media is videos. It's all pictures. So you're seeing it all the time. Do you know what I mean? And being able to compare yourself to other people, people you know, people you don't know, and it can become very toxic if you allow it to.
How do you manage your Instagram? Because you use it as a promotional tool,
but you
manage to keep your sanity with it. And what's your technique?
Sure. So that's definitely the case. I kind of try to like, with the whole comparison thing, I just try to tell myself, listen, everybody's different. Everyone's on a different timeline, right? So just because somebody's younger, somebody's older, like that's all kind of like just, that's just a part of people's journey individually, right? So don't compare yourself based on your age, you're this, you're that. It's like, no one's gonna be you at the end of the day, right? Good or bad, no one's gonna be you. No one can compare to you, again, good or bad. So it's like, do your thing, try to put that out there and try to enjoy what other people are doing and take inspiration from it.
And learn from it.
Right, rather than looking at it, instead of looking at something and having a negative thought, this is something like a few years ago, like especially when I was first kind of coming up and thinking like, oh, I'm not getting this, I'm not doing that, whatever. I started trying to train myself to, when I see something great, don't let that make you feel shit because something else is great from a person that's not a competitor, but a similar area of the industry to you. Don't let that make you feel bad. Yeah. Actually, try to get that to make you feel inspired. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And celebrate it. Be happy for it rather than, oh, this guy, hold on. Yeah. 3 years ago, I was doing better than him, and now he's—that's just toxic, man. That's gonna only end up one way.
It's kind of interesting because you gotta have a certain amount of competition to actually get out there and want to do stuff. Like, you know, because if you're very passive as a person, you don't have that competition, then you'll never have the energy to get anything made. I think every filmmaker has a kind of, like I said before, it's like that kind of need to get their voice out there and to get something made. So, and that requires, I think, a bit of competition, but. When the competition, like you say, turns toxic, when it turns kind of like into envy or jealousy or whatever, that's when it's harmful. But I think it's good to have that competition. It's like, you know, people say it's good to be angry if you can use it. If you can channel it.
But again, that's kind of like, I don't know. I completely hear you. I don't know, in my mind, do I try to see it as competition? But what I'm saying is the when I was saying for it to inspire you, I don't even just mean, oh, inspire you creatively. Inspire you to actually do shit. Like you just said, that person's doing something right now. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like you should do. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah, you should get out there
getting the expression going.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like let it like fire you up in a great way and be happy that that's been made and appreciate it rather than just, just going through everything and making you feel bad and why am I doing this? Why is other people getting opportunities? Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. It's like another great saying as well. I like basketball, right? There's a basketball analyst who used to be a player called Jalen Rose, and I heard him say one time, like, if you don't like something, change it. If you can't change it, change your perspective. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, if I don't like if I don't like this glass, change the glass, right?
Yeah.
Change it into something different. If I can't, I've got to change my perspective on the glass. Yeah, and like, that's kind of like, that is like with life. It's like, change it if you don't like it. And if you can't change it, change your reality, change your perspective on that shit. Yeah, do you know what I mean? So that's what I try to like think as well, man. Because a lot of this stuff is out of your control, and you got to just try to look towards yourself. What can you do better? How can you get better? What can you take from what other people are doing great and apply that to your own work? Mm. Do you know what I mean?
So you use Instagram. So you look at other people's work on Instagram and you use that as an inspirational tool.
Yeah, for sure. But do you know what's weird? Like me, I'm quite like. And I need to get much better at this. I'm quite like out of touch with like the now, like in terms of like filmmaking, like and like short form stuff, like even commercials, music videos. I'm not great at like, oh, let me show you a music video I've just seen this year that's amazing. A lot of like my inspiration comes from like a lot of music videos I watched when I was a kid, probably because it had the biggest impact on me as a teenager. Yeah. When I watched music videos and I'd go home and all I do is watch music videos. Or even like commercials, because when you're younger and you're watching TV, obviously there's YouTube ads and this and that now, but you can skip those and they don't, they're not on a block. When you're younger and you're watching telly and you're watching your TV with your family and whatever, there's commercials that like stay in your mind because you see them consistently. And
yeah.
I don't know, like a lot of my references come from stuff that I've maybe like seen in the past. I'm not saying all of it, but that's more so like a lot of where inspiration comes from. But with Instagram, you definitely use it as a promotional tool to showcase like what I'm doing. And if it wasn't for Instagram, to be completely real, Instagram in particular, and probably, you know, as years go on, it's going to be more TikTok based and stuff. But like for me personally, without Instagram, there's no way I would be like where I'm at now, because so much of like my connections, people, even films that like, even like, you know, we'll get into the Ray stuff in a bit, but like Ray reached out to me on Instagram, like over DMs, like about, escapism, like, and
what, before you made Escapism, she reached out to you.
So that's how me and Ray got to know each other and worked on the first job, because
so she saw she'd something
seen
you shot?
Maybe seen stuff through Instagram. Like her manager Tia had seen something,
right,
like, showed it to the group and said he could be great, and then she reached out to me in a really humble way as well, like in a no pressure kind of way.
She's
just
a
like
very humble person.
Exactly, like in a no pressure kind of way. Here, like, you know, it'd be great to do something. And like Instagram for filmmakers and social media in general, it's an amazing free tool to use for people to be able to see what you can do. And sometimes it's the battle of like, you know, if you're feeling bad or you're not feeling great, you don't want to post. It's kind of that thing. But like, if you try to see it more as like, this is going to benefit me, this is this is work. Because a lot of people as well, especially in the UK, it's like, we're kind of maybe taught a bit more to kind of like, not brag or like, look at me. But like with Instagram and social media in general, you kind of have to be like, look at this. Be grateful for the people that have helped you make it. But like, if you're not throwing something out there, people aren't going to see it. And you need people to see it. You need to use what you can to get the work and get like, you know, a bit of momentum in order to progress. So Instagram and like social media has been massive for me, man. Like in terms of like getting opportunities, people seeing the work, yeah, it's been great. I think honestly, without social media, I don't doubt, because I feel like I'm very driven, I don't doubt I would have got where like I'm at eventually. I don't think it would have been as quick at all.
It's a very powerful marketing tool, isn't it? It's a really,
and like literally, man, like within, especially like from like a artist, a brand, etc. point of view, if you've got someone's Instagram and they're using it like correctly, or they're somewhat consistent with it, I need to be a lot more consistent with mine, but like if they're somewhat consistent with it, or at least they've got some work up there, within literally less than a minute, you can catch a vibe of what a director can do quickly. Like if they're posting their stuff, it's like someone can go on it, scan, okay, this is sick. Oh, he's done work. This was, he's done that. Oh, he's done, okay, cool. This guy is right or not right for a project. Do you know what I mean?
What I like the most about Instagram compared to looking at someone's website is you get a chronology of their work.
So you
kind of get a feeling of a history of how they've developed. So you kind of scroll back and see. It looks like it's time stamped, you know, and so you get the feeling like, even though you can put old work up there at center, but it still has that feeling of a chronology. I think humans really, we respond well to that. We like to kind of look at a history of someone and just, it's like pouring through their kind of, their own kind of memories of their work almost.
I completely agree, man. I love that about Instagram, man. For sure, same. That's why it's kind of, sometimes obviously people can use Instagram however they want, but when people delete the early stuff, I'm like, damn. I love seeing like the like the steps that was that was taken.
And so, going back to your earlier point also of you like to watch music videos from when you were growing up, when you were in the impressionable age of when you first got into it, and also commercials. You're probably the last generation that watched television commercials in a traditional way.
Yeah, it's mad.
Because that's a captive audience, right? And people, I don't think the young generation realise what a captive audience that was, and the impact that a really well-made television commercial could have on the whole of society.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember when I grew up, there's certain commercials that basically formed my view of the world and actually made me aspire to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'll give you an example. There was this old a commercial for a bank. It was, I think it was either Midlands or this old kind of building society.
Yeah.
I think it might be Midlands Building Society. And it's basically this guy, it's Easy Like a Sunday Morning by the Communards, you know, the song. And that's playing. And it's this guy, he wakes up in the morning in a loft apartment and he strokes his cat. He's on his own. He goes down in his, you know, in his dressing gown to get some money out of the cash point to feed his cat, right? That's the commercial. I remember seeing that and thinking, that is the lifestyle I want to have when I grow older. And it had such an impression on me and stayed with me for so long.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, back then, commercials would have that impact on people. They were these short, perfectly formed films. That's the only time I'd ever seen something that had such strong atmosphere and impact. And in a way, I think the reason I got into commercials more than long form is because it had that kind of atmosphere, you know, like these commercials, they could sell you something really quickly, could introduce you to a world really quickly. And I must say, I was really seduced by that. So it's interesting that you are also that last generation that were
It's insane. Like when you think about like how quickly, like, you know, like everything's gone with like technology, social media, this and the other. It's made generations feel that are very close together in age, feel very far apart in terms of what their experience is. Like even my little brother, who's 3 years younger than me, there's certain things that he was doing at school or this and the other that were leaps ahead of what I was doing just from a technology standpoint. Like, you know, Skyping his friends or doing this or doing that. Like, I don't know, man. Like, and then again, like, so say someone that's 10 years younger than me, their experience growing up, like, is so different, like, from a perspective of, like, you know, like you just said, commercials, TV, CDs, man, like, CDs, having a tape. Like, this it makes me feel super old, but I'm actually not, do you know what I mean? But it progressed so quickly, it changed so much, the streaming.
So you're,
streaming
you're the everything. Last of the digital analog, the analog-digital generation.
Yeah, I guess. Because my first music was on tapes and CDs, and then that obviously quickly went, and now that's not even a thing. And, like, just really interestingly, like, with your take on commercials just then, it was like a collective experience where you could say, I could say to my friends, oh, do you remember this commercial? Like, do you remember this advert? Like, say even an example, like, you know, the dairy milk one with the gorilla, like, and the Phil Collins coming in the air. Because everyone was watching X Factor or whatever, that would be the commercial that came on. Whereas now the commercials are, unless you're watching TV, which not a lot of people really do in the way that they used to, commercials are targeted at people based on what they like, based on what they've inputted into the internet, like on YouTube and stuff where most ads are probably shown. So it's kind of impossible for 10 years from now, if you are 15, whatever, for you to say to your friend, do you remember that remember that TV commercial? Yeah. It's like, that's just not a thing anymore. Do you know what I mean? It's interesting, man. Yeah. It is. It's pretty mad.
Yeah. And also, so the other part of the point I would like to make, based on what you're saying earlier about watching TV and music videos that you were into when you were younger, is the fact that you don't necessarily stay up to date on all of the latest stuff that's coming out can be a benefit, I think, because what it does, it gives you the space to build up your own view of the world and your own references, your own pool of references. Because I think the dangers of social media, the problem I have with social media, I don't use it that much. I mean, I post on it, but I don't actually, I try and minimize
Being input into you when scrolling and shit.
I scroll very, very minimally. Right. The reason for that is that I don't like to get too many image overload for me is a problem, because I'm quite sensitive to images, and when I see them, they sort of stay with me.
Right.
And so if I see too many images, what happens is I end up seeing nothing. There's a famous
What do you mean? What, like, in terms of being like overstimulated?
Yeah.
Or what?
So I forget very quickly. If I see one image and then I don't see an image for a while, I remember that image.
Okay.
And if it has an impact on me, but if I see an impactful image and I see another impactful image afterwards, the first
it, like,
one
waters it down in a way.
I forget the first one. Yeah. So you end up seeing. There's a great artist.
I hear you on that. You know, it makes sense.
Can't remember. He's a Japanese artist. Can't remember his name, but he did this. I absolutely love this. It was a. a long exposure for the duration of a movie, right? So it's basically camera sat at the back of the auditorium, and the exposure for the movie, the exposure on the camera was 1.5 hours, right?
Right.
So you can imagine. So basically, what it ended up rendering as an image was a white image of the screen, and you could see it's a movie theater, and you could see some sort of ghostly moving heads because obviously it's an hour exposure, so you just see a bit of that.
Right.
But you fundamentally see just white screen, and his point, I think, was that when you have a sensory overload, you end up seeing nothing.
It's just too much
information. Yeah, yeah. And in a way, I really like that, because it's kind of how I feel about Instagram a little bit. It's that's just too much.
Mm-hmm.
So by limiting what you take in, you're more likely to be able to form a kind of point of view and an approach to your own work than if you take on too much stuff.
I hear you. No,
because
I agree.
Then it becomes all... It's like when a director sends references to me on a job, and if the director's got too many references, I don't think, oh, that's great, they've got loads of references. I think that ain't good, because they're not really clear of their references. There's too many disparate elements.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then part of my job, I feel, is to hone them down with the direction and go, well, why are you showing me this one? Why are you showing me this one? What is it about this reference? What is it? And then try and hone it down to like just simpler.
So it's like more purposed, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah. More focused. And then, because point of view is really important, right? Mm. With anything, having a point of view, it's like you're saying, it's like having that voice.
Mm.
It's so important. And if you don't have that point of view, then you can't say anything of value.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? You have to have that point of view.
Yeah, no, I completely hear you, man. And I think as well, like, it's helped in terms of like when everybody, well, not everyone obviously, but when like certain styles take over, because I'm not as in the loop, I'm not even really aware of it. So then I'm not in my head subconsciously going along with it, which is cool as well. I'm not saying I don't watch anything. Listen, I do, but I'm always like kind of embarrassed when like, say I'm in the production office or whatever, and people like talking about the latest stuff. I'm just like, I don't know what, I haven't seen any of this shit. Like in terms of like the music videos, the commercials, who's hot right now? Like who's the hot DOB, right? Who's the this, who's that? I don't really know all that stuff, to be honest. And sometimes I say, oh, you know, I need to get more with it. And then like to your point, a lot of like people, especially people that are a bit more experienced than me, they're like, you know what? It's not even all that bad.
It's empathy close.
Like, you're kind of, you're kind of more like, you're not, like you said, you're not getting this like watered down with like what's in. It's more like what feels right.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's funny, right? This is like, again, a bit of a tangent. But with that, when we did Escapism, I know we'll probably get into it in a bit, but just when we did the Escapism music video with Ray, when I was coming up with the treatment and stuff like that, so many of the references I had, I realized afterwards, were kind of like a bit like Euphoria. Have you seen Euphoria?
Yeah.
Right. Mm. I've never, this is a series, right? I've never actually, even to this day, I've never seen the series, but when I wrote the treatment, I think someone, one of the execs, I think at Code, was like, oh, a lot of these references remind me of Euphoria. Like, you should watch Euphoria, right? This was like a week before we were gonna shoot. And at that point, I'd already had exactly how I saw it in my head. And I was like, you know what?
That's bad advice.
I don't want to watch it.
Yeah.
That's what
you should not watch it for real.
Like,
if it's
like,
close to what you're thinking of doing, do not watch it.
I can't remember exactly who it was. I don't think it was DOP. I don't think it was Joey. Someone just said to me, I can't remember exactly who, right? But someone said to me, oh, this reminds me of Euphoria. Like, mate, you should watch Euphoria. Like, trust me. It's like, and I was like, nah, because like I haven't seen that. I don't want anything input in how I'm seeing. Let me just do it. And it's mad though, because like since it came out, so many people like, oh, this is like a Euphoria reference. This and I kind of liked like inside. I was like, it's not though. Do you know what I mean? I kind of thought that was cool. Like to our point of not letting certain things come into the picture to change how you see things.
You just end up with too much going on in your head. Yeah, it's about clear. You know, it's like for me, DOPing is. It's about limiting the variables. You know, when there's too many things going on, you're going to end up with you're going to lose your voice in it. You're going to lose the direction.
Should we look at some
more work? So do we want to talk about this job here?
Listen, and again, this was another Adcan thing, right? This was like my first probably thing that I could say that was like somewhat comical, right? This was a good one actually. Because you've got to run it with no sound, I'm guessing, right?
But basically...
Yeah,
do you want to talk us
through I'll just talk you through it, man. Basically, this is called Something to Shout About, right? It was basically the charity behind this was, again, another ad kind of competition. There was no budget with behind this, none whatsoever. All these people are my friends. This guy is literally one of my best friends. This is one of my best friends. This is one of my best friends. These poor people were getting dragged into my films early on, man. So funny. Basically, right, the charity was the Helen Bammer Foundation. And they're an amazing charity, and they work with like survivors of human cruelty, which is pretty like dark and pretty deep. Do you know what I mean? So the idea was to try to create something that was like comical, but to make people think, right? So all these different people, again, another one of my best friends, Dan on the screen right now, all of these people are shouting in public about things that are very, very mundane and everyday. So like the guy at the beginning, if you go back to the cafe scene, right, he shouts, again, another one of my best friends. I'm not even joking. I think five of these people are one of my best friends. That's my dad. That's Nathan, my boy. Right? So funny. The amount of people, it's giving me memories.
This is great for our viewership, because they're young filmmakers, a lot of them. Yeah. And they want to know how they get going. And the way you get going is you just, like you say, there's an old dry stone wall saying.
Yeah.
With dry stone wall, dry stone walls are walls that are made without cement. And it's just you put the stones in a certain formation and they make a strong wall. Right. And the saying is you always use a stone that's in your hand. And I've always loved that saying. It's always use what's in your hand. Don't try and search for the perfect stone, because you never find it, right? Yeah, yeah. You've got to use the stone that's in your hand. That's what you do with this. Right. It's really cool.
This is so funny. Even this, Jesus Christ. I swear to God, from start to finish, okay, I think there's seven people in this or six. Yeah? Five of them are some of my best friends, right? Two of them are people that I met as a runner that were at some commercials that I kept there. This is another thing I saw. If I saw someone I thought was funny or great or had a, you know what I mean, had something about them in the commercial space when I was a runner, I would try to just take their details or like find them on a call sheet or reach out something, try to keep them close, because I was like, in the future, if I have something this person can slot into, I know them and they can remember me and hopefully
that's
help
good.
Me.
That's really good advice. As well.
Right. Yeah. So two of these people, the two ladies in this were people that I'd met on commercials, right? So so he picks up his newspaper.
Yeah.
And he goes, I live in a house. He screams, I live in a house, while he's picking up his newspaper, right? Which is obviously mundane, right? That's my dad. Just pause it. When I say he did not want to be in this film, but he was helping me produce it. You can even see from his face.
But that works perfectly for the scene, doesn't it? Because he's meant to be irritated. Exactly. And he is fucking irritated. Exactly.
And he was like, I really don't want to be this. And I said, okay, I don't want to force you, yeah, but if you don't, the scene won't be as good. And he was like, for God's sake, all right, I'll be in it. So he was in it. He shouts, I eat food every day, which obviously is like a given in our society, right? This is my guy, Charlie. Pause it here. So Charlie was one of the people that I ran with. We ran the most frequently together out of anybody, because we used to run for Paul McCann. We were like the two people that run for him at a certain point. He does playback now. Charlie Gibson, my man Siege. Again, him, asked him to do it. He was happy to do it.
Did you ever work for Quiet Storm with me as well? Was it Quiet Storm? Because Paul McCann used to work a lot for Quiet Storm with me.
But you and Paul did used to work together a lot, like with Steven and other jobs as well. I'd see you work together. But Paul, man, he's a great
character. He's never changed.
He hasn't. He's crazy, but he actually kind of like, he did shape me early on, because he had like such a high, what's the word, like expectancy of like what he wanted a runner to do for him, for not just for him, for the set, and like a really professional standard of what he required. And when I take that onto a lot of other sets, it would impress people, whereas to him it was just normal. So that was you know, really great. And even though he was mad at work, like it was almost like a player at sports, they're like super intense, but then outside of that he was a lot more kind of like he's a lot more different, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. He is intense. I mean, I don't know where the energy comes from, because he keeps that energy up.
He's got an amazing energy. But he was kind of like, it's kind of weird to say, but he was kind of a bit like an uncle to me, like a kind of like a crazy uncle, but like a guy that like always like tried to give me advice, always one of the best for me, always actually cared, do you know what I mean? Cared about me and my journey and everything like that.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. But yeah, so this was Charlie. He shouts, I live in a house. Again, another mundane thing. We'll keep going. And this is James, another one of my best friends. He shouts, I do things that I like, right? So again, just a normal thing.
Yeah.
This is my guy, Tyrell. He says, I've got all of my limbs, which is again, normal thing as he's working out. This lady coughing, Laura, she says, when I'm ill, I go to the doctors. So she's shouting, when I'm ill, I go to the doctors, for God's sake, right? Dan checks his bank balance. He says, hey, when I work, I get paid. Another normal thing in our society. Then this woman, she gets a text from my daughter and she shouts, "My daughter is safe." That's me. This is how little money and resources these things had. Yeah, I had to put myself in the video just to be like an extra. And everybody who's walked past, you know, there's little moments of extras. Yeah. Each extra that walks past is someone that's already been in the film.
Right, it's just right, for some right, kind of movement. Right.
Do you know what I mean? Because I've learned that on commercials, like to make a film feel, to make a scene feel more real, you just need some movement. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So again, like I'm saying, I wasn't even thinking I was going to have to be in it, but I was like, it's a bit weird if she's not getting a response. Yeah, right. Yeah. So then the message is, the simple things in life are worth shouting about. And then if you play it, imagine risking your life to have them. Mm. Right. So, you know, survivors of human cruelty, all these things that are like almost funny to hear being shouted out loud, because in our society they're expected, they're normal. It's so wild for us to think that, imagine risking your life to eat food. Imagine risking your life to do things that you like.
That's a pretty tight script. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So imagine, you know, any of this stuff. Mm. My daughter's safe. Mm. I get paid when I work. Mm. All this stuff that we, you know, take for granted or is just a thing that's a given. Mm. In some people's lives across the world, unfortunately, that is not the case at all, right? So that was like the play, and yeah, man, like it was a mad one to do, and like I said, this had no budget, like.
And so when was this made? What year?
This was I think 2017,
right,
maybe.
Right.
But I think it was beginning of 2017. But again, it was for AdCan. So I was always loving to do short form things, you know, even early on, like my first ever thing is, I think I did a music video, my first ever thing that was really bad, like I said. But like a lot of my first stuff was commercial based as well, because I worked in commercial, so I liked the idea of trying to put them together. Do you know what I mean?
Do you so you were working with an agency on that script, the one we just looked at?
No.
Was that direct to client?
No, this is what I mean. That was another thing, like the one that we watched to begin with, that was Girlhood.
Yeah,
it's the same thing. It was a competition for young filmmakers.
Right.
Responding to a brief that a charity had written.
Yeah.
Then if you were one of the finalists, the charity would officially use your film as their ad.
I see. Right.
This was a finalist. None of these got chosen. By them. They didn't win. Yeah. They was close to winning both of them, but they got chosen as one of the finalists for each charity. Do you know what I mean? So that one again. My man Matt, who's a DIT/DOP, he you know, pulled a favor to get the camera equipment. We pulled a favor there, pulled favors on the edit, this and the other, just dragged it together again with no money. But it was great to see it like come together and get recognized, and it wasn't with anybody. But I've always enjoyed doing that. Like probably 90% of my work, even the commercial stuff, I've had a big hand in writing. Do you know what I mean? I don't maybe push myself or put myself out there as like a writer as much as I maybe like could or should. I feel like, because it is something I enjoy. But what I wouldn't really enjoy is to write and not direct it. If I'm writing it, I'm writing it with the idea to direct it. It's happening all at the same time. The shots, the words, the this, the that. Do you know what I mean?
A lot of the best directors sort of rewrite the commercial scripts with the agency to make it kind of like more fit into more kind of their approach. So there's a lot of that that goes on, I think. So I think that's healthy to be able to do both. And also, if you want to make short films, you need to be able to write them, right?
So, definitely. This year, hopefully back into this year, want to do like my first like proper short as well. But I'm going to get into that. This is one of my favorite films that I've done. This was 6 years ago now.
Okay, cool.
But this was one of my most shaping videos for me personally.
What's the shot?
So it's mixed format, right? Yeah. This is real mini DV here.
Yeah.
And you've got Super 16
that's
here.
That's Super 16
This is Super 16 here. This is one of my good friends, Erin.
Yeah.
Who's a G. She's like, she does a lot of different stuff. She does like creative direction. She does like painting or artistry.
Yeah.
She's also a commissioner now at FAM, the label.
But yeah,
this was her. So if you pause it a sec, right? This is what I mean about the amount of people that used to help me back in the day. Mm. Some of these jobs, I don't want to say they're going to get me emotional, but when I actually think and talk about them, it is crazy, right? This film, I want to say, had like maybe like £1,600. I swear to God. Like I think me and Aaron just put our own money into it to make it. Mate, this is on a crane. This is on a crane in a studio shooting 16 mil. This shot alone would cost way more than the entire budget of the entire film. But because I was so passionate about this film and like really wanted to tell this story, me and Joel Honeywell, the guy, like I said, DOP, that a lot of the early stuff we shot together, we were just pulling crazy favors. Like he was talking to camera houses, Panavision, like back this one, like the passion was pouring out of these emails. Like it wasn't just like, oh, hey, I'm shooting this. Can you, it was like getting in depth with people and like daily on set when I was turning up to set and like running, right? And at this time as well, I think my son, I'd had my son by this point. So he was maybe like 9 months old, something like that. Maybe might have even been younger, might have been like 6 months old. But like every day when I was on set and I was running and I had this idea and we were trying to do it, I was like talking to people about it. Like I was wanting, like, you know what I mean? Like trying to get people excited, or like, is there a way someone could help me? Or I had this idea with this where I wanted it to be a top down shot on a crane that could like move towards Erin, who's like, basically this, the backstory of this is it was a footwear collection that was part of like, it was a graduate collection in a I think London University of Fashion. She'd created this footwear that was based around like Afro hair, like the manipulation of Afro hair, textured hair, etc. And she'd had all these references and she did a great job with this collection, right? But I wanted to shoot this not just like as, oh, it's a uni collection piece on a, just like, you know, on a DSLR. I wanted to shoot this. Imagine this was like, this is a big drop of like footwear. Do you know what I mean? And like treat it like that. And she pulled in loads of favors as well. But I was just like obsessed with like making this as I saw it. And so many people, man, so many people helped me out. Like this crane shot, for example, like Jem Morton helped me out. Simon Ward. These are guys that I was running with, looking up to. And like they were just willing to help. This was a Sunday. They'll come into a studio, Denmark Studios, Mark Brennan. Yeah.
Oh, no,
Mate, he gave me the studio. His guys are turning up on a Sunday for nothing. And like this, this kind of like, that would spur me on so much, because I'd already be like crazy and like obsessed and like deluded with the film, but then I'd also be like, these people are turning up
because they see this something has, in you. This, you, I mean, not, that's, they they want to support the up and coming talent.
Yeah,
so they must see a bit of talent in you. Yeah. Otherwise, it's a waste. It's a waste of time, right? And that must be encouraging, because I think
that's what I mean. Down, it's encouraging.
You know that they're doing it.
Of course, because even as well, because some people, and this is what I used to think, some people, even if they weren't doing it just because they liked me, they wanted to see me do well, even if it was a more of a tactical thing or a mix of like, you know, eventually he's going to get somewhere and then I can, you know, I can pay the favor back or whatever.
Either way.
But regardless, it's a compliment. It's a belief, like you said. So that would fire me up, like even more to be excited and want to do it.
And you don't want to let these people down as well, right? Because they're helping you out.
100%.
Right?
And this is what, even like to my little brother now, who's like getting his photography career going properly and smashing all that and helping me a lot with stuff. I always say to him, and I say to other people, sometimes you just got to create a fake date. Sorry, I used to say this, on set, I'd have an idea, that I wanted to do. I'd make up a date, I swear. Because I just, if I told people about it, I was now committed to it.
Get some a point of focus. Right. Everyone a point
Someone's
of focus,
now, because otherwise, like, it's like anything. Like, we can procrastinate till the cows come home. We can tell ourselves we're going to do something. If we tell ourselves, oh, I'll do that next week. If there's no one holding you accountable, you, a lot of the time you might not. So a great thing with filmmaking, because you need people a lot of the time to help you out, not always if you're self-shooting and stuff, but a lot of the stuff that I was trying to make, I did. I would say to people, like, say like 2 months away or whatever, 20th of May, this is what I'd say, okay, the 20th, which is actually my daughter's birthday, but yeah, random date, right? This is the date that we're shooting. That was just a date I just said to myself. And then once someone said, yeah, I can do that day, I'm like, sure. Okay, this actually has to happen. Do you know what I mean? So then I would really then get the wheels going for it, because there's other people waiting on the day. Do you know what I mean? We shot it over three different weekends, individual weekends. And yeah, it was mad. It was an amazing experience, man. It's one of my favorite films, because it was like, there was a lot of cultural references as well. So, you know, she's cooking up some plants in here. Yeah. They were and this was as well. So if you pause it, right? This is one of the things that I loved about this film, right? Is the freedom in which to shoot it and kind of like express it how we just felt, not like, oh, there's so much input from a client, because you know, with footwear, with products, clothing, whatever, there's always going to be input. With this, it was just like we could just do it how we wanted to, right? So this was the footwear, this was like one of the slippers that were here, so there's got like the hair clips, they've got like some texture going on, and I wanted to shoot the footwear in a way that felt like natural to the scene, rather than, oh hey, look at this Nike tick, or look at this, just for no reason. I was like, nah. Each time we see the football, I want it to feel like there's a reason behind it in terms of like movement or what we're doing. And it wasn't like big storyboards. It was very much like felt. But like this, for example, her like daughter's on the balcony, like taking pictures or whatever, and she's cooking, but she just takes a little step to the side. And that's when you see the product.
Let's go back to that. Yeah, so here you go.
So this is all like flipping between formats and stuff. We had the, yeah, so that, and then she does a little tiptoe. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like small things, you know what I'm saying? And like, then there's a little bit of connection between her and the daughter. Then footwear again, like you're seeing as well, if you pause it here, she's on a train, which is a very like mundane environment. Again, so many of my best friends, one of my best friends is sleeping in the shot, which is so funny. But anyway, again, just dragging people in. The train scene is like, all this footwear is just like mundane or people not really taking a risk with what they're wearing. So it goes down the line and then you see like this statement, you know what I mean, footwear standing out from it. So not only is it the clothing, it's the person that's wearing it and who they are in a scene that is just every day. Do you know what I'm saying? So a lot of this, all of this shit like felt like it had purpose. Do you know what I mean? Which I loved shooting, man. Just filming on a train, like... Then her walking down. This is a bit more in her own mind, and again, like cutting between the formats. I loved it.
Playing, me and my man
David, who edited this, like playing with the formats, but not.
Yeah.
A lot of the time with mixed format, I love mixed format, but I think it gets overdone, and also when it is done, a lot of the time, I think it's done for no reason, without purpose. I think my favorite thing to do with mixed format is have the shots follow continuity from the last one, like. This is happening now, or the point of view of the same moment.
Yeah.
Rather than, okay, 1 minute I'm dancing, and then the next minute I'm stopped and I'm chatting to you, and those two shots
together. You like to bridge it with some.
Bridge it as though it's the same format. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And taking the viewer through it. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, you're guiding them through it. More.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than it just being like random.
I like what you've done here with starting on the tube scene as a reportage, kind of like a documentary tube scene. You're just catching people, and then you empty out the tube and you have this woman as a catwalk on her own.
Exactly. Yeah. Sort so of it going, brings it back to like fashion vibes.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I think that works really well. So again, it's like playing with form, isn't it? It's like playing with formats. You're playing with form at the same time.
And again, this was just like a minimal crew. Like,
yeah.
So if you pause it here again, like this was a random idea, but like the Doberman, you know, like another thing that just adds something to a scene, and it's like something that's like, you know, a bit of statement of power and like individuality. And this is Georgia. So this is Georgia Smith, the music artist, one of Erin's good friends, like, and they work together now. But at the time, like, Erin had brought in a lot of people to be in the clothes, be in the footwear, sorry. And that was how I met her to begin with as well, a bit early on in her career, but smashed that scene as well. Mm. This was, again, one of my friends.
It's got a kind of City of God vibe to it, hasn't it? Yeah.
So again, this as well, just like the togetherness, the fact that you could have alcohol in it, and then there's the shoes again, but it's in a moment. So if you pause it again, this is one of my favorite scenes, actually. If you go back a little bit, and again, I guess we're here to waffle, so I was going to apologize for waffling. But
no, you carry on.
So if you pause it here.
Yeah.
These are two of my pals here as well, Fumi and Evie. They were so sick in this scene. They looked great. Like, Erin styled it all, like, with the clothes and stuff. But it's like, they're having a little drink. They're chilling. They're being themselves, right? Mm. But then you see the footwear as almost like a part of that and like an extension of the people that are in them, rather than just here's the footwear on its own. It's trying to mesh it all together.
Mm.
So if you play it, I try to do mini stories within it. So if you play it and pause it here. So the mini story is, they're just two friends that are chatting, whatever. But then in this moment, you get them, and she's a great actor, by the way, Fumi. Again, a woman I met on a TV ad. She was the lead on a TV ad, for, I think, for MTV.
Mm.
And I just loved what she was bringing. And I was like, I need to like know this person and like get to know. And hopefully, you know, if I do some stuff, try to get her involved. Because it's such a small moment, but you need a good actor to play this, right? She looks at her as more than a friend. So just in that moment, it's nothing to do with the footwear. It's just like a little scope into a moment, do you know what I mean? That doesn't need to be explained. That's the kind of stuff that I love, like in commercials and music videos, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that looks as it all, doesn't it? Yeah, let's rewatch that, actually. Mm.
So they're just laughing around, you see the shoes, and it's just showcasing people you don't always see, like, I don't know, man, it was great.
Then I know there's a trope that you like a lot of this portrait to camera. Because there's a couple of videos we'll get into later where
very portrait based,
that kind of that look to camera.
I love portraits just capturing a moment of like people's, like, again, it sounds a bit like artsy, but like people's essence, man. Like, I do like that, and I like giving a little direction but not too much. Like, let them feel like themselves, do you know what I mean? I like doing that, like, and setting it up in a certain way. And mate, as well, with no budget on this, really minimal budget, so many favors with the 16 mil element, what I really, really loved, man, was minimal takes. Minimal, like the takes you'll see in this, there would have been one, 2-3 max, like, and especially that look, the craziest thing, that look from Fumi, the girl we were just talking about, that was the very end of the role. When I say that was so, like, if we don't get this one, we rehearsed it like 5 or 10 times. It was like, it only be shot once. And like the magic of film that I love is like the focus in which that brings is you really like finely tune something before you execute it, especially if you don't have the money to just run it out. Do you know what I mean? And that's something that I've always like loved about shooting on film. And shout out as well, like just in terms of my memories now, there's a great director called Dexter Navy, who's a photographer as well. And I met him when I was a runner. It was a job that, Jesus Christ, it was a poor lake of a job. It was with Paul McCann, it was an ASOS shoot, I think it was. And like minimal pay, whatever, tough day, but it was worth it when you're meeting certain people and you're having conversations. So I spoke with Dexter a bit, said, I'm trying to direct, I love what you're doing, seen some of your stuff. This is again, probably like 2016 times years ago. And he was like, one of my number one pieces of advice is to shoot film, like shoot film. And at this point, I didn't even really know what that meant, like too much, do you know what I mean? So it's probably even earlier, but like, I hadn't really looked into it as much and I hadn't looked at styles and what it can bring and even, let alone the process. So I was like, that kind of stuck with me. I was like, yeah, okay, like, yeah, let me try this. Like, let me see what this is like. And then I started realizing City of God, the film I was talking about earlier, that I loved so much at that age was 16 mil. So many of these films that I like really liked the look of, that felt real to me. What I love about 16 mil is like, it feels more like how you kind of see the world rather than 4K where everything's so crystal clear. That's not how like a human being sees life. There are, even in this room right now, dark spots, there's noise going on, there's this, there's that. Do you know what I mean? Everything's not perfect. We don't have perfect vision, and I think that's what kind of like always makes it feel nostalgic and like real.